Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. This is your show host, Randy Fine. And you know, I was listening to the song in the beginning, and it is a tribute to Amy Winehouse. There's a documentary on, I don't know if it's Netflix or Amazon Prime, all about Amy Winehouse, and it's really great. So if you aren't familiar with what she does, or what she did, I should say, check it out. So it is Free Advice Friday, the day that I take your calls and answer your questions about your narcissistic abuse issues. If you have any comments you'd like to share or experiences you'd like to share, that would be great. I also want to say that my book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, is doing really, really well. And I want to thank you all for purchasing the book, because I know how important it is for you to have it. And the reviews are coming in pretty quickly, and they're all great. So thank you. If you would like to leave me a 5-star review, if you have the book and would like to leave me a 5-star review, I'm offering you a free half hour of counseling plus 2 free gifts. So if you want to contact me, just give me an just email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. RANDIGFINE.com, and I will set that up really quickly with you, and you'll get some free advice one-on-one. So today I have two letters that have been written to me with questions, and these are actually two topics I don't believe I've covered, so I'm excited to talk to you about them. So the first letter reads this way. Hello, Randy. 6 years ago, my wife ended our marriage. 3 years ago, my daughter refused parenting time. 3 weeks ago, my son followed suit. He has told me lots of things his mother said. Mom said, you're dangerous. Call my house home and dad's house. You don't have to see dad on Thursdays because he's reneged on the deal. When I said she shouldn't be discussing that, he said that she said that too. When I turn 11 years old, come to your house anymore. I bought your book but have not yet read it. I knew I was emotionally, psychologically, and financially abused during the marriage. I stayed for the children and the caretaker of their mother so she wouldn't turn on the children. I am well-researched in parental alienation. I am very concerned about the abuse of our children through emotional incest. Would you speak about this issue on your podcast, please? Okay, so I do speak about emotional incest in my book. What it basically is when the narcissist takes a surrogate intimate partner. So it is sexualized abuse, but not sexual abuse. It's also known as covert incest. This is when the parent seeks emotional support through the child that should be sought through an adult relationship. And the results can be equal to physical incest. So, but don't mix the two up. There is not sexual abuse as we know it happening. But there's a huge impact of emotional incest. Children who have experienced this may find in their adult relationships that they have a hard time setting boundaries and getting their needs met without feeling guilty. They may have a hard time maintaining intimacy in their partnerships. And emotional incest creates this kind of dysfunctional loyalty or obligation to the parent that ultimately can turn into love-hate with that parent. This is fairly common. And what happens is the parent will lean heavily on this child that they, consider the chosen one. So this happens in emotional incest. I see it often with parental alienation. And the pull of this parent is so powerful that the other parent really has no power whatsoever. Because this child feels indebted to the parent, and they feel like they owe the parent. The parent tells them basically that, I'm alone, I have nobody, you're all I have. And that's a huge burden to place on a child. So some of the examples that you may see with emotional incest are the parent relies on the child to praise them. And this, what this does is it forces the child's own needs to take a backseat to the parent's. So they have to hold up the parent emotionally. They become the parent's best friend. And this is where boundaries blur. These children are not capable or mature enough to handle these kind of adult relationships. And what happens is they have to put aside their own social needs for this parent. So boundary issues result in this. Children have a very difficult time. There's discipline and expectations and all kinds of messed up things that get involved in this best friend syndrome. Parents will talk about all the adult issues they're having to this child. And children do not have this capacity, emotional or psychological capacity, to be able to deal with what they're being told by the parent. So it really messes them up. Sometimes in emotional incest, the adult will ask the parent for advice and to have them guide them through things that they should not even know about. So basically the roles get reversed and the child becomes the adult becomes the child. And this also involves the therapy where the child has to learn to be the therapist for this person, this parent. So it sets them up for a lifetime of feeling that they need to take care of everyone else's emotional needs rather than their own or before their own. And sometimes this impacts their romantic relationships when they get older. So this usually occurs when narcissistic parent, it usually occurs when they're lonely or want to be perceived as lonely. And it's very hard to break this because this is based on guilt. This child feels that this other parent cannot survive without them. And, you know, I was basically told that myself. My mother said, you're everything. I couldn't live without you. It's a huge burden to place on a child. And it kept me trapped for well into my 40s. So the problem with these kind of abuse tactics, manipulations, are that we cannot make the child see any different. The only way anyone heals from narcissistic abuse is when they discover it on their own. And the only way they discover it on their own is when they are in excruciating pain and they're looking for answers. So we cannot make our children see this a different way. There's a lot I can say about parental alienation. The person who wrote in says that they are well-versed in parental alienation. So I'm not going to go into that, but there's a whole chapter in my book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, about parental alienation. Just very basically, it's when the narcissistic parent alienates the children completely from the non-narcissistic parent, and the children see the narcissist as the victim and their good parent as the perpetrator, and they can't see it any other way. And there's all levels of this, but it can get very, very bad. And sometimes the impact is that the good parent loses that child forever. But there are tools that you can use. There are tactics you can use if you're in the beginning stages of this to try to save this. And I urge you, if you are in a marriage with a narcissist and looking to leave or wanting to leave it, do not leave that marriage until you get help and a strategy for leaving it. Because if you do, parental alienation will follow. And there's little or no support for you in the court systems and in the field of psychology. So I can certainly help you and help you work through this and give you a strategy to get you out and to get you get your children to live with you or have, you know, get you more custody, sometimes full custody. I've had incidents where I've worked with people before they left and they've ended up with full custody. So there are strategies that can be used, and so I urge you to seek the help before you go. Once you leave, it's very hard to undo the damage. So that's what I have to say about that topic. This is Free Advice Friday. The number to call in if you wish to call in is 424-220-1801, 424-220-1801. This other topic is something that I actually had to really look into because I didn't know a lot about it. When I looked into it, I found out that I actually did, but I didn't know the terminology. So let me read this letter to you. Hi, Randy. I was in touch with you a couple of years ago, though, briefly. I don't know if you remember, but I had made a comment on your public Facebook page about having gained the realization through some of your podcasts, as well as through other materials, that I believed my dad to suffer with NPD. Due to being out of contact with him, his wife searched the internet for my name and came across the comment that I had left for you. I'm sure you can imagine the fallout, a nasty phone call from my dad, which I sent to voicemail, followed by a 2.5-minute rant about how mortified and humiliated he felt being called out in such a public way. He proceeded to call me a hypocrite and a few other choice things. That is the last time I heard his voice, though I receive an occasional text message, generic greeting card, and they send gifts to the kids for their birthdays, with tracking numbers, of course. Through my own schooling, I've learned a lot about the disorder. I just finished my MA in professional counseling. I aspire to learn all that I can about personality disorders, including NPD. And my big therapy aspiration is to work with people who have been affected by a personality disorder. I listen to your podcast, To Find Time for Healing, and love the Friday sessions when you discuss NPD and recovery. I've gained so much from hearing your personal stories, insights, and the stories that others share when they call in. Thank you for providing the service that I don't feel that receives enough attention. Anyone who has suffered through this can probably speak to how important it is to feel like there is information out there and people who are properly educated and trained to recognize it and hopefully treat it. That said, I'm currently taking an extra trauma class to try and understand more about PTSD and some of the ways that children can be affected by all kinds of abuse and neglect, including psychological. I came across an interesting topic related to PTSD regarding overgeneralized memory / autobiographical memory. The gist that I'm finding is that when our development of organizing our experiences and creating our narrative is arrested during childhood by trauma, we can often become impaired into our adulthood. The consequence is that many people aren't able to access specificity of early childhood memories. This serves as a way to protect us as accessing traumatic memories is triggering. I wondered if you had any further information about this or any experience with this topic. Also, one of the biggest dilemmas I face is recalling much detail about my childhood. I get little flashes of things, but my brother seems to be able to remember so many more details. It's always bothered me. And while I believe that I was never abused physically, I have now to question whether anything beyond the verbal psychological abuse happened that I have blocked out. Thanks for any insight you may have. I'll be listening, and I am very much enjoying your new book. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Okay, so, I looked this up because I had actually, honestly, never heard these terms. And what I found is the reason I haven't heard these terms is because there's a lot of studying being done on this. It's not a whole lot of mainstream information, but a whole lot of studies. And they're not so easy to read. There's case studies, some very specific things that are studied. But I was able to get kind of a gist of what this is about. So one of the things that I have learned, and I'm trying to find, okay, there we go. Okay, so overgeneralized memory is a tendency to recall past events in a broad, vague manner. So if you don't have overgeneralized memory and you're asked to recall an event, you maybe have more details about it, more than just a memory of, oh, that was good, oh, that was bad, oh, I remember it. And this is a protective mechanism that helps us cope with the painful events of the trauma we experienced. And it is very difficult to come out of a long-term relationship with a narcissist, whether it be in childhood or in adulthood, without developing complex PTSD. And the difference is that complex PTSD happens over an extended period of time. So it's where the stimulus happens over an extended period of time. PTSD is one event. So most of us are suffering some effects of complex PTSD. Now, autobiological memory are very important to the experiences we have as humans. These memories play a key role in creating who we are, a sense of ourself and our identity. And they kind of remind us of the lessons we learned in the past that help us call on, that we can call on to help us solve similar problems in the future. So it's very important that we have this recall of these autobiological memories. So one of the things that I have learned, and this opened up a huge door for me in helping all of you to understand what's going on with you. It is known with PTSD experts that when we have a memory, if we have a good memory, one that makes us so happy and our endorphins start firing, this is a memory we're able to remember intact because it is non-threatening, it is joyous, and we can remember it in total. When we have a traumatic memory, this is very, very dangerous to our emotional and psychological health. And so if we remember this intact, it can really destroy us. So what our mind does for us is it fragments it into many different pieces, so that when we try to recall the bad things, we have a very hard time recalling them in a single memory. Now, you know, this doesn't necessarily speak to the autobiological memory where, you know, we are remembering everything or not remembering them as reminders. But it is, some studies have found that there is a significant difference in the way memory works between, you know, people who have had trauma and those who don't. Let me look some more at what I wrote down here, because, you know, I was trying to look through all these studies to try to figure out what, okay. So it says, one of the things I read is, why does memory become unspecific? And this is a quote from this article from Very Well Mind about blurred memory function and depression. The quote is, being less specific might help to prevent negative or painful emotions by recalling events in a less specific way. And so this is kind of what I was just saying. So this is why, you know, a lot of times we look back and we have a very hard time remembering all the bad things that happened to us, but we do remember good things. They stand out. There's a few reasons for that, one of which I explained. Another reason is that narcissists, you know, they are brilliant in knowing how our mind works. We have a very difficult time knowing how their mind works, but they know exactly how our mind works. And they know that we hold on to and focus on the good, because we are looking for potential in this person. We do not want to believe that anyone is all bad. So when they show us a good side, we hang on to that and we say to ourselves, see, that person is not all bad. But, you know, what you're feeling inside is so much trauma and disdain for this person. When you're around them, you're full of anxiety and depression and frustration, and the life gets sucked out of you. And then you say to your logical mind, but look what they did for me. Well, the narcissist does that for you. It's called intermittent good-bad reinforcement. They do that because they know you will hold on to that and excuse the rest. They know that that's how your mind works. So they throw these things in enough to make you hold on. Because if they were just abusing you constantly, you would just, you'd have to run. You wouldn't be able to take it. Eventually you would see it. You wouldn't be able to look away. But as I said, they're brilliant. They know exactly how our minds function, and they know what to do to keep us hostage. And that is exactly what narcissistic abuse is. It is a hostage-taking situation. You are a victim who cannot leave. And the reason you cannot leave is because they've used mind control on you. I don't mean mild cases of mind control. I mean the very worst. I mean to the point where you cannot think your way clear of this. You can't. They have changed the way that you think. And I actually read an article the other day that calls narcissistic abuse one-on-one cult. So I've often said that this is cultish behavior, and that we feel it's the same kind of mechanism that a cult leader uses to draw their members in, their followers in, same mechanisms that the narcissist will use to draw us in. Now, So if you think of it in terms of it being a cult, and then you often wonder, you know, if you've ever seen any documentaries on cults or anything like that, and you think to yourself, there's the door. Why don't they just walk out? This is weird. Why don't they just walk out? Their children are being abused. Their spouses are being abused. They're watching people murdered around them. Why don't they leave? They can't, because their mind is held hostage. So I want you to understand that when you have been abused by a narcissist, you are in a hostage situation. It is very hard to leave it, because what your intellectual mind knows is not what your emotional and psychological mind knows. The two are at great odds. And what this does is it produces, because you know that you're capable of doing it, but you're not really capable. You know that you're capable of leaving. You know this person is ruining your life. You're being abused. You know it's horrible. And yet you feel this tremendous affinity to this person and loyalty to this person. So this tug of war that goes on between these two thought processes create tremendous guilt. And the guilt becomes self-abusive, because you say to yourself, why can't I do this? I'm an intelligent person. I'm an educated person. I function well in business. I do everything well. Why can't I do this? Why can't I think myself out of this? And so then the one thing that helps you recover from narcissistic abuse, which is self-love, you're actually sabotaging that self-love, because you are beating yourself up over and over because you can't do it. You cannot make yourself think the right way enough to pull yourself out of the situation. So have no doubt when I tell you this is brainwashing and mind control. It is serious. This is not mild abuse. In fact, it is probably the worst form of abuse there is. So even if you're not physically abused, which, listen, narcissists don't have to physically abuse us. They have such power over our minds. They don't need to lay a hand on us. So if you think that physical abuse is worse than emotional abuse, I am telling you it is not. Physical abuse is much easier to wrap your head around. You see it. You feel it. It is there. It is tangible. It's touchable. You see bruises. Your mind can comprehend what happened to you. Emotional and psychological abuse are just the opposite. Your mind doesn't know what to do with this craziness. So what it does is it fragments it, because it can't hold on to these crazy memories. Your mind cannot deal with this crazy confusion, chaos. So I hope you understand the seriousness of what goes on in these kind of abusive situations. And if you are out there listening and trying to recover from this, and you are having a war between your intellectual mind and your psychological emotional mind, this is exactly why. So I say this over and over. I know I say this on every podcast. I say this all throughout my book. You can't do this yourself. And often, if you've done a lot of research into narcissistic abuse, if you've read a lot and you basically have the concept of what this is, you know what's being done to you, all you need is a little bit of help, just a bit of help. Sometimes it's really one session, just to help you understand how to get from being stuck between those two places. And often, it's really about deciding not to beat yourself up and understanding that being validated and supported, that this is not unusual considering what you have endured. It's not about you. It's not about your strengths or weaknesses or your ability to overcome adversity. It's not about any of those things. You may have overcome lots of adversity in your life, but just for some reason you can't do this, and you're saying to yourself, what's wrong with me? There's something wrong with me that I can't do that. The only thing that's wrong with you is that your mind has been controlled. Somebody has a hold over your mind, and that is why you can't think your way out of it. So I hope that I've answered these letters in a way that the writers, those who have written in, were hoping I would. I hope that I've elaborated on this, but I can't emphasize enough the damage that is done. If you sat in my shoes and heard the stories that I hear, it would blow your mind. The narcissists are capable of just about anything. And we get confused because we see these people as human beings, and we think they are who we are. They think they have the same mind we have, but they don't. They don't process things. They don't feel guilty, except when it comes to themselves. They're abusive. They're hurtful. They're selfish. They're self-serving. And it all goes back to narcissistic abuse, because the only thing the narcissist lives for from the moment they take on the false self is narcissistic supply. It is their heroin. It is their drug. It cannot exist 1 minute without it. They have to have several sources. And so they take hostages, because that way they're assured, they're guaranteed some source of supply. And you may say, well, then why do they abuse? They abuse because the more they beat you down, the longer you stay, because you lose yourself. You can't go. You are a hostage. So this is what narcissists call relationships. This is what we call relationships, but they are not relationships. They are a parasite host situation. These people are predators. They prey on those they believe they can suck the life out of. So, I don't want you to beat yourself up or to blame yourself for not being able to overcome this yourself. Trust me when I tell you. I have worked with thousands of people. I'm telling you. You cannot think your way out of this. It is very, very difficult. I talk about deprogramming and reprogramming because, in essence, that's what's happening in order to heal from this. But it is not some kind of thing where, I or any other counselor will reach into your mind and change the way you think. Absolutely not. It is not like that at all. What we do is show you how to think a different way and develop different neuropathways in your mind so that the old way of thinking paves over and the new way of thinking gets grooved in deeper and deeper. This is what this is about. But it requires constant validation and reinforcement that you are not to blame for this, and that the fact that you cannot heal from this is, it's not your fault. It says nothing about who you are. And once you heal from this, you are even better. You are stronger. You have great tools for living life, and you don't ever have to suffer this again. So I have a few minutes if anyone is listening in live and would like to call in. The number is 424-220-1801. If you have a comment about anything I've said or a question about anything I've said, feel free to call in. This is a lot of information to take in. And I wish that this wasn't as bad as it was. I really do. because it is ruining lives all over the world. And it is, it's beyond what anything that you could believe. So I work very hard at this because I try in every way to put this message out in social media, in my books, in my podcasts, by contacting other people who are in the field. I'm trying to open the minds of the general public to this problem. And the thing is, the more people that can do the work that I can do, the faster we can get this accomplished. But you've got to be healthy. You've got to be on the healing side before you can reach out to other people and help them heal. We have a lot of work to do. And these are our sisters and our brothers that are going through this. We have so much company in the world. People in every corner of the world, people who speak every language. It is everywhere. And as I said in the beginning, the court systems do not understand this. Those who have been trained and licensed in psychology and psychiatrists do not understand this because this is not part of the training. They don't learn it. So, and the reason they don't learn it is because everything that they learn must be approved by the American Psychiatric and Psychological Associations. If they don't recognize a syndrome as being truly a disorder, then no one is taught about those syndromes. And narcissistic abuse, narcissistic victim syndrome is one of those syndromes. It has slipped through the cracks. No one is identifying it as a true syndrome. And it is, which is why when you go for therapy, unless someone has experienced narcissistic abuse on their own or has experienced it clinically many, many, many times, they cannot see what's going on and they cannot help you as a result of it. So just because someone has a license and a degree, a master's or a doctorate, it doesn't mean they know this. In many cases, in the majority of cases, they do not. There's nowhere for them to go to reference this except my book, which is one of the reasons I wrote it. I put it out there for therapists so they can read this, so they can learn about this. So they know what they're seeing when they see it. And they know that they have to use a totally different tactic in helping that person. Because the person that's seeing them bears no responsibility for what is happening to them. And therapists are not likely to validate that. That's not, you know, there are certain principles of psychology that do. But most therapists that we see nowadays are cognitive behavioral therapists. And they do not embrace this for the most part. There are superstars out there. There are people who really know this stuff. They've lived it and they've experienced it through their patients. And if you find one of them, that is awesome. I wouldn't know where to tell you to start looking, to be honest with you. Because really the only person that I trust with you is myself. Because I know I can help you. And I wouldn't want to put you in any situation that doesn't help you. And I know that I can help you very quickly. I don't want you to be stuck with someone who their agenda is to keep you going for months and years and have you make little progress. No, I want you to graduate from working with me as fast as possible. That is my agenda. I'm not about the money. I'm not about keeping you on. I want you to graduate and move on with your life that gives me such tremendous pleasure, I cannot even tell you. That is my goal. I have no self-serving motive in doing this. I want you to be healthy. So our time is running out. Like I said, if you have read my book, want to buy the book, and you want to leave me a 5-star review, and don't do it unless you believe in it, but if you read the reviews, that's what people leave, and you'll see what people, and most of those people have not gotten free counseling. Most of them have done it on their own. So I just want to tell you that these reviews are, most of those reviews are authentic, but I'm offering it to you, my listeners. I will give you a free half hour of counseling and 2 free gifts just because I want you to get this book. I want you to read it because I know it will help you. So with that said, I really am finished with the show. Next time, it will be the second Friday of September, which I don't have the date in front of me, but you guys can look it up. Second Friday of September, I will be doing the show at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. The number that you can call in is 424-220-1801. And if you want to write in and have your letter answered, as I answered these 2 letters today, you can write me, email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. And I will answer you. I promise you. I will answer you. If for some reason I don't have time to do it on the show, I will make another show. And I will answer you. You will get your questions answered. So feel free to write to me. If I get overloaded, as I said, I'm going to add another show. I will do it for you to get this information out there. So I love all of you. I want you to get well. You have people that understand you in this world. You do not have to be alone. And on that note, I will say goodbye and have a wonderful day. Thank you for listening.
We hope you enjoyed today's programming. To learn more about Randy Fine, read her articles, or to make a counseling appointment with her, please visit randygfine.com. That's RANDIGFINE.com. Or visit her on Facebook at Randy G. Fine.